Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Time to once again look at stories from other parts of the planet. Jonathan De Burke Butler joins us once again. Afternoon, John.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Right, Brazil we're going to go to first, and I suppose this is a salutary lesson that we hear about a terrible disaster where people get killed. And perhaps we don't hear about it. It happens all over the world. Maybe the numbers aren't as high, but it's still every bit as appalling. This has happened in Brazil.
I know what you're saying, because it's been overshadowed by events in New Zealand, probably. And also we tend to probably look at English-speaking parts of the world. But this happened in Brazil. It happened in a suburb of São Paulo, so a town called Suzano has a population of about 250,000 people. So it'd be small sort of an area, and it's heavily populated by the Japanese Brazilian community there, just to give you a picture of what it's like.
I didn't
like.
Know there was a Japanese community.
Quite a big one, yeah. This is two ex-students aged 17 and 25. The curious that the age gap, 8 years, I'm sort of curious that how they got to know each other or how it came about, because apparently this was in the planning for the guts of a year. And what they wanted to do was they said effectively that they wanted to recreate the shooting at Columbine and be remembered for it in the same way, which is kind of a sick way of looking at it. And they'll certainly be remembered in this town of Suzano, where they shot 5 students, 2 teachers, and I believe another man who may or may not have been one of the shooter's uncle, was killed before they went into the school. They then actually ended up shooting each other effectively after that. So there was 10 dead bodies there when police came, and they came within 8 minutes. I've been told that something was going on, but by then it was all done and dusted.
The shooting each other, was that part of their plan as well, or is that?
I assume so. So what happened was that one shot the other and then turned the gun on himself, apparently, and that's thing ended. But the people were grappling around for motives for it, and then O Globo went and interviewed the mother of the youngest shooter, who, as I said, was just 17.
Yeah.
And she said that he was bullied in the school, was forced to leave the school earlier, and this might or may or may not have been the motive for him going back and seeking revenge on people who presumably had nothing to do with bullying him in the first place. But it's shocking, and it's not something that happens. Okay, so we unfortunately associate Brazil with high rates of murder, and it does have very high murder rates. It's nothing like some of those countries in Central America, but it's still about 34 per 100,000, which is very high.
Yeah.
But school shootings are not something that happen that often in Brazil, so it's quite a rare event.
The access to guns is that very easy?
Well, there is actually. It's interesting the timing of it, and a horrible word to use in that respect. But we know that that Jair Bolsonaro is the new president of Brazil, and he, of course, has said that he's actually going to loosen up gun laws because he believes that the way to stop gun crime is to allow everybody to go around carrying guns. So this is an interesting
before,
sort of view on how to deal with gun crime in Brazil. But obviously this will feed into the narrative around that as well. As regards, is it easy to get them? I don't know, to tell you the truth, but I'm sure that if you wanted to, it's quite possible. Given that there was 64,000 murders there last year,
it
I would
must
say
be pretty easy legally.
I would say,
illegally.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Okay, the Cook Islands we're going to next, or whatever they might also want to call the Cook Islands.
Well, yes, that's it. These group of islands in the Pacific who are in free association with New Zealand. So effectively, if you're born in the Cook Islands, you can become a New Zealand citizen as well. But it doesn't work the other way around. And actually, there's 3 times more Cook Islanders living in New Zealand than there is in the Cook Islands themselves. So there you go. But anyway, they're looking to change their name, or there's at least talk of it. They actually brought this to a referendum back in 1994, and it was fairly soundly defeated, but they think that they might get away with it this time around, namely because the Maori chiefs are all behind the name change. So the idea came about earlier this month. They said, let's just put a Maori name on it and change the whole thing altogether. There was opposition to that. So now they've kind of backtracked and they said what they're going to do is they're going to add on a Maori sounding name and keep the Cook Island parts as well. Presumably, you know, it would have a lot to do with the brand around tourism and that kind of thing. So watch out for that. There could be a new country.
Right, but it will be called Cook Island slash something
else. It'll be called the Alleluia, Alleloa, whatever, Cook Islands or something like that. I don't know. There you go.
Once
I've
again,
just
your
named
command
a
of Maori is breathtaking. Does that mean they haven't figured out? Do they not have a Maori name for the Cook Islands?
I don't think they do, actually. There was some sort of name that was proposed in 94, as I said, and that was put to bed.
Right.
And what they're going to do now is they're going to take several proposals and then they'll whittle it down and then they'll vote on one if they decide to take on a new one.
Right, okay. Right, Bangladesh we're going to go to next. And FIFA, or at least the boss of FIFA there, is in trouble.
Yeah, and it is, you know, a story about football, but there's more to it about that. This is a woman by the name of Mahfouza Akhter Kiran, and she's a FIFA council member, so she'd be fairly powerful in that organisation itself. And obviously she's the representative for of that, you know, organization in Bangladesh as well. And she was in a television interview, a recent television interview, and she said that the Prime Minister of Bangladesh, who is now in her third term, has not invested enough money in football, that she's ignoring football for the benefit of cricket, which is huge in Bangladesh.
Okay.
And she basically suggested that the Prime Minister was benefiting from the investment in cricket. Okay, so not everybody was particularly happy about this. It's funny that Sheikh Hasina, the Prime Minister herself, actually hasn't said anything about this, but somebody has taken a case on her behalf. Okay, he's a sport official by the name of Abdul Hassan Chowdhury Prince. Okay, and he's filed a defamation claim, appears on her behalf, really, or he says that she has, this woman has brought the nation into disrepute. Now, it's been taken very seriously because she's been arrested, and when her lawyers went to try and get bail, it wasn't given to her, so she's still in detention. It's got so serious that Amnesty have actually got involved now and basically called for her to be released immediately. And I suppose it comes on the back of something that's a little bit more sinister, because, you know, for a long time Bangladesh was known for being fairly open and liberal and secular, and it kind of prided itself on that. But in recent years, and certainly under the prime ministership of Sheikh Hasina, dissent has been, or free speech, shall we say, has been silenced to a degree. So there was a new law that was brought in last year called the Digital Security Act. And in the last 5 months, 60 people have been arrested under that particular act. And it's very vague, you know. Mm. So there was one incident where a group of students were protesting against problems with traffic, okay, and road safety. And they said something against the Prime Minister, and they went down very heavy on the, or the police went down very heavy on the protesters. Someone criticised them and was sent to prison for 100 days. This was a well-known photographer, I can't remember his name. But for something simple, like protesting against road safety,
Or funding for soccer versus funding for cricket.
And you get flung in jail. And she might get up to 2 years for this, apparently. So it's extraordinary.
Yeah, that is extraordinary. It seems to be any sort of criticism will not be tolerated.
Yeah.
In Nigeria, going to now, and again, this is, well, I suppose, is it a natural disaster? Was it called by natural forces?
No, I don't think so. It's
bad building,
and it's something that it's fairly frequent, unfortunately, in Nigeria. This happened in Lagos, specifically Lagos Island, in the middle of the city. Now, it's a big old city, as you know, 23 million people live in it, and you know, it's the commercial capital of Nigeria. So, as you already touched on, you know, building standards wouldn't be the best, the materials wouldn't be the best always, also, and because it's a commercial capital, obviously you get a lot of people going in there to try and pick up scraps of jobs and the like. So there's a lot of poor people living in very congested areas, and it causes problems. And in this case, a four-story building collapsed. It killed 20 people, that's what we know so far. It happened last Thursday, and the search, remarkably, was called off on Friday, which seems quite an extraordinary thing. Now, a lot of people were pulled from the collapse alive, but a lot of locals who I think it was Reuters reporters went and spoke to, basically were not convinced that everybody they were convinced that there were still people lying under the rubble, yeah. and there could be. So it seems a very sort of short time to give to the to the rescue mission.
And there wasn't any reason given why they were stopping.
No, just that I think that authorities were convinced that they had done as much as they could at that particular point.
Or they didn't want to put any more bodies up because it just got worse and worse for them.
It could well be the case. Now, we know that it actually contained a school as well, so a number of the victims were children. The school was there illegally, it's thought. It was set up privately and it wasn't part of what was meant to be in the building. But authorities have gone in and have now started clearing people out of buildings in the area that they think are not sound and have started cordoning those off and pulling them down as well. So it's had two effects in that people are now being made homeless in the area, albeit that the authorities are going in there on the... saying that they're, saving people's lives.
My word, that is that's very disturbing. And again, that's a kind of, 20 people get killed, a building collapses, including kids. And, that's the first anybody's probably heard of it in this part of the world. Right. Remaining on that continent, though, new tensions between Uganda and Rwanda on the border.
Yeah,
are they fighting about?
Yeah, so it's a series of spats, really, going on between the two countries. So the latest one is on Wednesday. Uganda's foreign ministry basically accused Rwanda of imposing a trade embargo on them, right? So they basically said, look, Rwanda's come up with this deal where if you want to import goods from Rwanda, you have to go through jigs and reels, you have to put in an application, and so far, no applications have been successful, okay? So they're effectively trying to stop trade, right? Now, there's been stuff going on between them for the last number of years, okay?
Yeah.
So... Rwanda have a few issues with Uganda. They say that Ugandans are at best allowing people who would like to see the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, kicked out, and at worst are basically financing them and giving them aid, okay?
Yes.
So they're not happy about that. The Ugandans are saying, no, this isn't happening at all, and there's no problems, and in fact, Rwanda, you're trying to stop us trading with each other. You're telling Rwandans not to come into Uganda, and all sorts of difficulties. So there's back and forth between the two countries. So at the moment... it's causing trucks to back up and day-long traffic jams and 3 or 4 day-long traffic jams in and out of both countries, and it's not working out very well. So it remains to be seen what will happen, but at the moment they're not happy. And of course, there's the backstory of Museveni and Kagame themselves. So they were friends
for a long time, and Kagame actually
fought under Museveni. So at the moment, it looks like, to be honest, it's a lot of willy waving that seems to be going on between the two. But they haven't sat down yet to try and thrash out an agreement.
A similar story now. This is a row, though, between Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. This is a border dispute.
A border dispute between these two countries, yeah. And two villages have been evacuated as a result. Now, when the Berlin Wall came down and the Soviets were defeated and the Cold War ended in the 1990s, we all thought it was great. But all of these countries had to find out where they were and where their borders were, basically. And there's been disputes going on between Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan ever since then. Okay, so the most recent conflict between these two has resulted in 3 deaths, actually. But it started as a result of a simple thing. Kyrgyzstan were trying to build a road through a disputed area, okay, this border area in the Fergana Valley. And this sparked a conflict between a local conflict, really, okay, which is now... escalated into a diplomatic situation between the two countries. So in one way, they're dealing with it very well. Deputy prime ministers and presidents have all been on the phone to each other, and they said, okay, we need to investigate what happened here, make sure it doesn't go any further, and we need to fast track these talks to get the border sorted out. But it just goes to show that on the ground, these local tensions do happen, and they still exist, and they can escalate quite quickly.
That's quite extraordinary. Right, finally, Iceland we're going to, and apparently you've all got the wrong impression of Iceland. It's more like Marbella.
Yes, indeed. And two mayors in Iceland have taken issue with Google, specifically Google Earth, I think it is, or Google Maps.
Yeah.
And they say that the images of their particular towns don't portray the the real
because the images the on reality. Google are, yeah. are just covered in snow.
Yeah, basically they don't portray the reality of the cities. They are covered in snow, and basically these two mayors are taking issue with Google. They're saying tourists are going to stay away if they see the alternative between going to another part of Iceland or coming here, and if they see that it's permanently covered in snow, they might just stay away. So hopefully they'll get something back from Google on that.
You'll notice that even though he could have, Jonathan declined to actually tell you what the names of those towns are, because, you know, he wouldn't want to give you the wrong impression until Google sorts it out. What should we look forward to apart from Brexit over the next week?
Yeah, Brexit. There's elections in Thailand on Sunday. Also on Sunday, Prince Charles will become the first member of the royal family to make an official visit to Cuba. So that's quite interesting. And on Friday, Tommy Robinson is in court for contempt.
Ah, oh, yes, a great patriot. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us today. We'll take a break, back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.